Welcome to the Optimal Optimism podcast series, made active by Virgin Active. The single-minded focus of the series is to empower you with practical tools to create a positive and abundant life. Our aim is to replace the glass half empty mentality with the productive glass half full mindset. As part of the series, we'll be chatting to Virgin Active experts who'll be giving their insights on the topics we discuss. In this episode, we'll be speaking to Dr. Atuno, who has multiple degrees and specializes in sports and exercise medicine. He's a director and clinician at the Cape Sports Medicine Medical Practice, based at the Sports Science Institute of South Africa. His interests and research include working with all-level endurance athletes, race, medicine, and musculoskeletal ultrasound. Apart from his clinical work, Dr. Atuno is the Deputy Chief Physician of the UAE Emirates Pro Cycling Team, the Chief Medical Officer for the Two Oceans Marathon, Head of Medical for Cape Town Spurs Football Club, and a consultant race doctor for the APSA Cape Epic and other sporting events. Welcome to the Optimal Optimism podcast, Dr. Atuno. How are you doing today?
Morning, Barrett. Thanks. Yeah, all good. Thank you. Thanks for having me on and pleasure to be here.
Well, let's take it straight down to basics. Explaining to me, what is exercise?
So yeah, it's a term we use often and bandy about, but the actual definition of exercise is effectively engaging in any physical activity that requires actual physical effort or work. In general, the aim is to improve or sustain your health, both that being from a mental and a physical perspective. And allows sort of global body or physiological fitness to improve. And that ranges from musculoskeletal through to cardiovascular as well as the important mental fitness. And the level of physical activity that one can do is a spectrum, you know, ranging from very mild to very intensive, vigorous activity. But the bottom line is that it all aims to help all your systems, you know, mental and physical, help them to work more efficiently.
So you mentioned the mental and physical. So how does exercise benefit those systems? In what way?
Yeah, so the benefits of exercise, you know, over the years that we've been studying exercise and the effects on the human body are vast and numerous. From the physical benefits, the strong cardiovascular fitness, the musculoskeletal fitness and conditioning that goes with all of that. Other elements and longer term benefits would be weight loss, increasing bone strength. And particularly in this day and age where bone health and muscle strength are important, particularly in the geriatric populations, it increases energy levels, reduces fatigue, you know, in general, as well as people with comorbidities, has proven benefits on those elements of people's health. It reduces the risk of chronic disease. So diseases such as type 2 diabetes or hypertension, cholesterol problems. It increases your insulin sensitivity, reduces your blood pressure and cholesterol. And in fact, exercise is one of the treatments for type 2 diabetes, which is, you know, almost a pandemic in itself. And, you know, what it allows for is it an example of what exercise does is it uses insulin sensitivity and brings in glucose into your body in a completely different manner than using insulin. So exercise itself negates the need for insulin. Which often type 2 diabetics, the problem with them is that they have resistance to that insulin. So it really is an effective form of reducing the current ill health that comes with that at the moment. It also promotes antioxidants regularly, so it allows for better cellular and skin healing and recuperation. You know, other aspects of life like sleep and relaxation. Helps with a circadian rhythm resetting and improves those rhythms so that it allows you to recover and sleep better. It also reduces pain. So your perception of pain is reduced, and particularly in conditions of chronic pain, illnesses such as fibromyalgia and things like that, the benefits of exercise are significant. And it also improves brain health and memory. You know, one of the biggest treatment protocols for the geriatric or the Alzheimer's population is exercise. You know, it really helps to sustain the memory function and improve your brain health. And then finally, you know, one of the other benefits is also improved sexual performance across all genders. And one of the noted benefits is that it reduces erectile dysfunction in males too. So the spectrum of benefits are broad and significant, and the risks of versus the benefit ratio is far in favor of the benefits.
Well, so just in that 2 minute overview, why is not 100% of the population doing exercise? That's my question. So do you feel that in general that people are incorporating the right types of exercise for their body types? For me, there's this perception in society that I feel as an observer, so being an instructor as and an observer of people exercise, that they think exercise equals running or exercise equals doing, you know, weight training, because that's what they see on social media. That's what they see in magazines or the televisions, or what's perceived is that, oh, exercise equals that. And there are so many different types and ways of exercising that it sometimes feels that people are equating their exercise routine to what the societal perception should be rather than what is beneficial for their specific body type. Would you agree?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, the problem nowadays is, you know, obviously with the advent of social media and particularly, you know, images being thrust in our faces all the time, where there's that, you know, the perception of image and that the ability for people to image craft on these social media platforms, it conveys a sense of false appearances. And you know, the majority of people who follow those accounts want to obviously emulate the looks and the performances. And certainly there's some, you know, positive motivation in that. It gets people moving, et cetera. But the general rationale sort of behind it is often wrong, and it goes about it in the wrong way. And then people realize, you know, in the reality of the situation is trying to get to those, you know, those amazing aesthetics or performance levels is there's a lot of hard work, or alternatively, the attrition rate is high and they fail before they even almost get up the blocks. So that's one element that we're dealing with nowadays more than we ever have before. But certainly there are different body types, and certain exercises will certainly benefit different body types. I'm sure a lot of your listeners know, but the three types of body types one gets in the human population, you get an ectomorph, a mesomorph, and an endomorph. And just in quick summary, an ectomorph is generally a very skinny, thin person with low muscle mass. They're the typical kind of person you'll hear saying, I can eat as much as I want and I'll never gain weight. They've got generally a lowish percentage of body fat.
Yep.
Those kind of people, the benefits, you know, strength, you get strength training, cardiovascular training, all the different types of body types should be able to engage and must engage in all strength and cardiovascular yep. training. But particularly for a thin, skinnier person, heavier weights with high periods of recovery in terms of strength and cardiovascular should be regular moderate intensity, you know, on a weekly basis. Then you get a mesomorph, which is typically somebody who's got a lot more muscle mass. They gain a lot more muscle much quicker, often also more lean, so lower body percentages, narrower pelvises, et cetera. So more typically your typical athlete kind of setup. And again, from strength perspective, they should do varied resistances right through from light to heavy. And in terms of cardio, at least 3 to 5 sessions per week and mixing it from very low intensity to high intensity workouts. And then finally, your endomorph, that's somebody, and unfortunately, you know, a large percentage of the population is heading towards the endomorph build, where it's a higher percentage of body fat, particularly around the organs and sort of typical around the belly. You know, along with that goes the hypertension, the type 2 diabetes, et cetera. They don't gain muscle easily, and they generally have a sort of a wider hip setup. And for them, you know, again, strength critical, but doing more general total body workouts so that they burn more calories, and doing ranging from moderate to heavy lifting. And then they're, from their cardio perspective, you know, also 3 to 5 times a week and a full range would always benefit them. But the other element is also, you know, people have got illnesses or injury, et cetera. And so exercise prescription for example, the geriatric population versus the diabetic population. There are different elements to those programs or those regimens, and one needs to be aware of that if you are prescribing exercise or if you're doing the exercise yourself, you know, what you're capable and what is beneficial for you and what is potentially going to cause harm. Just as a quick example, the geriatric population should really focus on more balance and strength training, as well as some cardiovascular fitness, you know, because the older you get, you want to prevent falls, you want to keep balance, and you also want to do load-bearing exercise that you improve your bone health. You know, the risk of breaking bones as you get older is always there versus the overweight or the type 2 diabetic population, you know, initially starting off with low load bearing exercise. So you don't put undue load or force on joints, which are potentially going to injure them. And as the weight and the health starts to improve over time, then you can start to increase into more weight bearing exercises. there's certainly different, you know, horses for courses here. And you know, my advice on this is if you're ever in doubt, rather ask a professional, either from a physiotherapist, a biokineticist, a sports and exercise medicine physician, anybody who can prescribe exercise in a healthy, safe way, manner, and start low and build up from there.
And also, would you agree sort of testing out the different types? So, you know, these days, cardiovascular, you have running, you have sort of dancing, you have boxing, you have all these different types. So maybe testing out which one for you is enjoyable and at the same time beneficial for the body, so that it becomes that passion and not, I have to go to the gym right now to do this exercise. So maybe just feeling the different types of exercise, because this, you know, these days there's so many different types of toning, like as in yoga, Pilates, all that kind of stuff, or balance type of things. Because there's so many of these different types, I find that people just, they stick to that one type, that there's the societal definition of, I need to run, where, you know, it's not necessarily their body is, it's, you know, formed for running. There's all these other types of cardiovascular exercises. So testing the various different types out and see what works for them, that it becomes a passion and enjoyment.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so it's that old adage, you know, exercise is very compartmentalized, and people think of exercise, you know, there's only three go-to things. It's either a run or going to the gym, or, you know, maybe riding a bicycle or swimming. You know, but, you know, the spectrum of exercise, and particularly nowadays with the advent of, you know, all these sort of completely out of left field sports, you know, from, you know, ultimate frisbee to, you know, pogo sticking on the beachfront to, you know, to the older stuff like skateboarding and roller skating, et cetera. You know, it's massive. And, you know, people need to, exactly what you mentioned, you know, they need to find their passion and find what is actually enjoyable about their exercise. You know, there's a big aversion to exercise from and I'm speaking generally, but, you know, there are a lot of the reasons for aversion to exercise. Do you hear the typical, I hate exercising? You know, a lot of people have that, you know, whether they've had a bad experience growing up as kids, where they were, you know, pushed too hard, or the school situation wasn't conducive to their type of exercise that they would have liked or didn't have it on offer, whether they became injured or ill from a certain sport. You know, so there's often a history, and you need to understand that in that person. And I hate exercising is quite a common phrase I hear. But then also, you know, in modern life, there's time pressures, there's feelings of being overwhelmed, and particularly in the current climate, people are feeling an abnormal amount of stress, you know, levels that people have generally never experienced before. Other elements like family life, you know, loss of energy or just lack of energy. And there's also the adage that I hear often is, you know, they come into my rooms and they'll say, listen, I'm not an athlete. Yeah. You know, and again, the broad definition of an athlete, you know, you think, or, you know, what's your default think of an athlete? You think is the guy or the girl running down the 100-meter track at the Olympic Games. Yeah. That's an athlete. You know, absolute hogwash. You know, an athlete is right from your novice beginner runner who's 115 kilos, right through to your elite athlete. And that's, again, changing the mindset. And I think us as health professionals and everybody who's trying to promote exercise and well-being, and that goes right up to gyms and all other allied professionals, is to promote that idea that exercise is broad spectrum, and the definition of an athlete is absolutely not what typically we think it is. You know, another element that I find in aversion to exercise is often it's a psychological element. Again, that lack of confidence or certain insecurities come through. There may be stigma with weight, etc. Often elements, in particular in social media world, of body shaming and sort of body dysmorphic disorders. That's a huge element, which I don't think we pay enough attention to. And often if you treat the psychology, in other words, you address those issues, you'll find the key, or that patient or that athlete or that person might find the pathway to their exercise a little bit easier. You know, once they have insight and skills and how to deal with those elements, because those are deep seated, yeah. You know, they're not just, you know, we've had a lifetime of, you know, glamour and magazines and all this. And now it's even worse with social media and the body beautiful. And it's not about that. It's about, you know, being healthy and just enjoying what you do. And then, you know, other classic aversions to exercise, obviously, you know, with it comes pain and discomfort. So people don't want to be in pain. So one's ability to suffer is often an advantage if you can suffer a little bit more. you know, injury and illness, absolutely. Those are dissuaders. And then I find that people exercise for the wrong reasons. They want the improved aesthetics. They want all those typical things that are associated with exercise. But what they don't realize is that those things will come, but yeah, it takes energy, effort, and crucially time. So that's the long-term goal. Yeah. The shorter term goals are going to be your benefits of exercise, as I mentioned earlier. So it's a mind shift that people need to focus on, rather focusing on what makes you happy, which is often more difficult and easier said than done, but focus on what makes you happy, and focus on the shorter term benefits. And then in the long run, you know, try and put those out of your mind. They will come. It's just a time game. But you know, in this day and age, we want fast stuff and buttons to switch things on and off. So
exactly,
it's difficult.
But what's interesting also is that I find that people are always, when they look at themselves in the mirror, they always look at the parts that they believe are negative or that they don't like and what they want to change. So when it comes to exercising, it's about focusing on that, always about that, instead of just letting that flow from the benefits and the time of doing exercising. I remember a client I had a number of years ago, she said to me these words, "When are my hips going to go?" In the next breath, she said, "But what will I be complaining about then next?" So it's like, yeah, well, you know, rather focus on your body as a whole, love the body as a whole, because people generally don't love their bodies. You know, I find that people, you know, as kids, we're always told to cover up everything, cover up, not to love our bodies as they are. And when they look in themselves, then it leads us as adults, we're always like, okay, what needs to change? Instead of saying, cool, this is cool, let's exercise now and see the benefits from that point.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the underdiagnosis of body dysmorphic disorders and body shaming is massively underdiagnosed, and particularly in the male population. You know, we think it's traditionally a more of a female yep. angled or issue with the female athletic population or in general. But what we realize, and particularly as you move sort of towards the higher level athlete, it's far more common and vastly underdiagnosed, and it's a serious problem that does need to be addressed. So yes, it's patients or athletes or normal people just always striving for the next best thing. And yeah. maybe they'll get there, maybe they don't. And if they get there, like you said, you know, well, what's next? It's never a matter of saying, great, my body's not 100%, but I'm going to wear a bikini and run on the beach. I don't care, you know, and just being confident and happy with yourself. And I think that's the hardest part. But again, very easy to say, yes, you know, be passionate, be happy, believe in yourself, yeah. etc. These are deep-seated issues that often need a one-on-one, you know, discussion and perhaps a few times where you know that patient or that person feels safe to discuss those elements and then you can start to build and you know progress forward. But it's not just a matter of, you know, follow a home program and exercise or go and start a running program. It's not often as simple as that.
Yeah, and you mentioned that 100% perfect. Every person's definition of that 100% perfect will be different because of what their perceptions are. So your definition will be different to mine, so to speak. So again, understanding what that 100% perfect is, why it's that, and if it's coming from a place of the social media space or actually coming from a holistic, healthy place.
That's exactly it. It's exercising for the right reason
yep.
or the wrong reason. I think that's what people mostly do. They probably exercise for the wrong yep. reason. Which is what you mentioned in the latter is, you know, it's for the aesthetic. It's to be like, you know, person X on social media because that's the look they want. That's what they want other people to perceive them as.
Yeah.
That's where perception is key. I encourage people to exercise, but, you know, sift out what the right reasons are. And if you change that mindset and say, okay, great. You know, that's still maybe a long-term goal. And it's hard to dissuade people to forget that goal of the aesthetic. Because again, you know, you also want some sort of reward for all the efforts you're going to put in. But I think to change the mindset and focus on the short-term goals, and actually just live, take each day and say, right, great. I'm feeling good. I felt good. My mood's been better. I've slept better. My week this week has been fantastic, you know, but if you look and you look down the line in 8 weeks time, when you've lost those, you know, 500 grams, for example, and you're feeling fitter, you don't pant up the stairs anymore, you've gone the gene size down, for example, whatever, you know, objective parameter you use to measure your health and well-being, that's over time, that's when you're going to see the change. And then if you continue along that growth, that way, it snowballs and it, you know, goes, and you may stagnate or plateau for a while, and that's okay. But anything done rapidly is never good. And again, understanding that mindset and focusing on the now, as it were, and it sounds very cliched and things, yeah. But it really is with exercise. Just take each exercise you do per day, take it and take the benefit from that and say, how did you feel? Great stuff. Don't overanalyze things, but just take the enjoyment out of it. And then over the coming weeks, you can put that all together in a cumulative kind of picture and say, wow, these chronic or longer term benefits are now starting to pay off. And hopefully that keeps the motivation going forward.
I totally agree. But also even if it's 6 months or 6 years down the line, it's also that, and this is discussed more in another episode of The Optimal Optimism, but just bringing it into this conversation is that also listening to their body, because even if you've been exercising for 6 years and you are tired that day and you are doing a stretch class or a walk instead of a run, about engaging and listening to your body and knowing, okay, cool. Today I'm listening to my body and I'm going to be benefiting from walking and stretching or doing Pilates instead of pounding the pavement or doing a boxing class, so to speak. So it's the cumulative understanding of the exercise, the body, and how everything works together in a holistic view.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you know, it's difficult to balance that in life. You know, life goes on. You've got families, work obligations, etc. You know, and time is short. So to be able to balance those scales is often far easier to say than to do.
Yeah.
And if you can start to make exercise a priority, it's key. And that's investment in oneself. And a lot of time, people are busy with their lives. They're busy. You know, they've got family responsibilities, etc. And everybody else benefits from that person giving of their time. But there needs to be a certain time period in the week or in the day where that person actually invests in themselves. And at the end of the day, exercise is one of those pillars. And where, like you said, you know, whether it's a full on, you know, 21 kilometer run or just a mindful meditation session, all of that is investing in oneself. And at the end of the day, that allows you to be better in all your other spheres. The general adage is that if you look after yourself, the people or their circles around you that usually, you know, need your support will also reap the rewards.
Yeah.
Effectively.
Completely. Because there's that whole guilt, you know, parents with kids or with work, or I need to get this done. So I need to skip the exercise or miss my routine today. Dominoes effect into week, month or year of not getting in the exercise and routine in because I need to be the family, need to be there for work. But in the end, a person will get more done for the family, more done for work, because they'll have more energy levels, be more awake, more acute, more there to be present when they add exercise into the equation.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, my wife, I always use this example. My wife will tell me, you know, if I haven't exercised for a few days, she can see the change. And she'll say to me, go and do your thing and come back a better person. You know, and that's, I mean, it's a simplified version of it, but yeah. it's true. I mean, you're a better husband, better father, better worker, more efficient, you know, et cetera. And I think you start building that up in your life. But yeah, as I said, the ripple effects are also beneficial, not only for you, but on those other people around you.
To finish off, you've mentioned a whole bunch of different elements of how we can create this positive relationship already, but can you give us a top 2 or 3, 4, 5 tools that people can implement now, like in this second of listening to this podcast, to achieve that positive relationship between themselves, routine, and exercise? As we've already discussed, it's not a quick fix.
You know, there's a few things we could do and suggest. And you know, the point of this is to, you know, maybe take one or two or maybe as many as you like. But something, these points should find something that works for you and try it. And if it doesn't, you know, move on and try another element. But the point is to try. And I think the first element is to redefine what exercise is in your brain and your mind, as we mentioned earlier. And that's to find something that you actually enjoy. And I find, you know, people say, oh, you know, go and find something you like and then you'll be happy. Again, it's very difficult to do that. And what I often tell patients is to, you know, you may have to reminisce and dig deep into some memories from past and to say, well, you know, if you're a typical I hate exercise kind of person or I have never found something that I like, I don't like, you know, individual running and suffering. I don't like team sports, whatever you had as a child or growing up. Try and dig a little bit deeper and say, well, what did I like doing as a child? You know, for example, I liked to ride bikes in the park, you know, with my friends, or I liked to jump into, you know, the local pool off a diving board, you know, or into a river, whatever it was. And you think, okay, well, geez, I actually had so much fun doing that. That was what I just was free and fun. And again, that's that you would think, well, that's not exercise. Of course it's exercise.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so doing something that associated with a positive memory, I think is one of the key steps in saying what you find. And even if it's as left field as I said, like a pogo stick, you know, get a pogo stick and go pogo sticking. You're going to get your heart rate up. You're going to work your muscles. It's exercise. And so it doesn't have to be within those set limits of what classically is defined as exercise. Yeah. or the method of exercise. And then, as we mentioned earlier, just to do it for the right reason and to realign your goals. So I think redefining exercise is one of the key steps. Positive memory is all very important in that. And if you can, and most people will have something that they can work with. The second thing I'd say is being a doctor, my patient's health is always paramount. So, you know, I would always say to start safely. And particularly, you know, if you haven't been exercising for a while or you're starting off as a novice, you may have chronic conditions or an injury or an illness, et cetera. Rather, if there's some in doubt at all, before you get started, get checked up by a relevant health professional and make sure that you are, you know, in good enough condition. Because the last thing you want is some sort of injury or illness or you know, exercise to unmask a chink in your armor, as it were. And then all that's going to do is detract from further exercise and put you into that negative spiral again. And so making sure you're starting on a good, healthy foot is key. And then the third thing would be to start low and go slow. I think, you know, the time goal or activity volume goal, set it at what you want it to be in and then stick to it and set realistic goals. That's the other thing. You know, often you have these lofty goals of, you know, I want to lose 10 kilos in 2 months, et cetera. And then there's a high attrition rate because they are not possible. But set long-term and short-term realistic goals and doable goals, because you're far likely to achieve those than the more lofty ones. I find that if patients reward themselves as well, and that doesn't mean go and, you know, have chocolates and things like that and reward yourself like that. I mean, if that's what does it for you, that's fine. But I would say, you know, simple things like after you've done an activity, you know, say, cool, now I deserve this, you know, flat white, for example, or I'm going to now have that relaxing bath with oils and, you know, and give myself that recovery time. You know, set small rewards like that, you know, will kind of motivate one and say, great, I've done that in a week. Or if it means now that I've done my exercise in the morning at 5 o'clock in the morning, that means great, I can go spend time with my child, you know, in the park, for example. That should be a reward. So rewards are important. And we're simple beings, and I think, you know, it does work with incentives, but set decent and small rewards for oneself. And then one of the other elements is choose who you do it with. If you want to do it with somebody, so use that exercise, whether it's a walk, you know, if you, and you're going to mix that with socializing with a friend, you know, set a walking date in inverted commas, you know, and say, great, I'll see you and we'll go for a walk, catch up and stuff. Again, you've done a phenomenal walk, you know, cardiovascularly, you've worked your muscles, and you've also caught up with your friend you haven't seen for ages. So there are a lot of ways you can go around doing that and, you know, setting things up. And if you like running, for example, go with like-minded individuals, people who are also novices or at your level, and find groups that are running with them and start social groups, et cetera. A little bit more difficult in COVID times, obviously, but you know, when things are safe, it's advisable to do that as well.
Thank you for listening to the Optimal Optimism podcast, made active for you by Virgin Active. Find out more information on our sponsors by visiting virginactive.co.za or follow at @virginactivesa on all social media platforms. Optimal Optimism is produced by me, Barrett Edelstein, together with Erin Medise and Spike Ballantyne, and is available on cliffcentral.com, the Cliff Central app, or wherever you enjoy listening to podcasts.